I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Adderall is a popular drug that helps treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, commonly shortened to simply ADHD. Earlier this year, the FDA declared a shortage of the drug and expects that there won't be any resolution to the shortage until at least March of next year. So for people who need that medication, it's going to be a few more months until things go back to how they were. Now, according to NPR, the problem started back in August with a labor shortage at Teva, which is the company that sells the most Adderall in the United States. They couldn't keep up with the production and fell behind. That spread throughout the market and then into other products, which led to several other manufacturers reporting the products were on back order. And we all know being on back order means that they can't get the medications to the pharmacies. So how are Vermonters handling the shortage? Are people feeling the effects? To help us navigate what this looks like in Vermont and how Vermonters are dealing with the shortage, I want to welcome Lauren Bode, a pharmacist and interim executive director at Vermont Pharmacists Association. She's also an assistant professor of pharmacy practice at Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Science. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you.
I also want to welcome Dr. Suzanne White. She's a psychiatrist in private practice at Tamark Psychiatry, who has also works part-time as the medical director at the Howard Center Northern Vermont Outpatient and Spoke Service Center. Dr. White, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Just want to say that you women sound very busy given your titles.
I am pretty busy. That's true. I've got quite a few screens right around me right now, and I'm hoping none of them go off.
Now, Dr. Way, I want to start with you, and let's just start by talking about ADHD. What is it, and what does it look like on people?
ADHD is a condition in which there are some changes in the way that the brain processes information that comes in, and when they take a look, there's actually some differences in the way brains look, and there's differences in the way brains function when people have challenges with processing. And the interesting thing is that it's not a lack of attention that people have, but they have a difficulty focusing their attention. It's a difficulty with filtering out the information that's coming in and trying to do too many things at once. And it was thought previously that this is something that children grew out of as they got older. And we've become increasingly aware that this is a condition that can really impair people's quality of life well into adulthood.
Now, we know that NPR has reported that there was an uptick. Is that something that you're seeing in terms of diagnosis from the pandemic, Dr. White?
Yeah, at my private practice, I am getting quite a few inquiries from people who are concerned about their ADD diagnoses that they've had, and they may have tried to go without medication and they're struggling, or they're just curious about it. So there's definitely an uptick, and it was interesting because I just had read about this uptick and recent spikes in adult ADHD diagnosis in the recent Psychiatric Times. So this is definitely something people are noticing.
And pharmacist Lauren Bode, I want to hear from you and hear, like, what are you seeing when it comes to how people talk about ADHD now?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about the pandemic is that I think there has been a greater acceptance and understanding that we, in general, all have mental health needs. And so for some people, this may be speaking more openly about, you know, depression, anxiety, and seeking mental health therapy. For some, it's talking about their struggles with obtaining their ADHD medication.
Yeah. And so, Dr. White, back to you. When it comes to mm-hmm. the pandemic, what do you think has contributed to people talking more openly about ADHD?
I think that there has been a tremendous increase in awareness. People are now understanding that there's more education available online. Social media is making people more aware of the challenges ADHD presents, and people are recognizing themselves in TikTok videos or other resources online. And so they're saying, oh, wait, that is what's happening with me. And they're coming in saying, is this true? Can you please evaluate me further?
Now, Lauren, we know that when people get diagnosed with ADHD, one of the most common medicines is Adderall. Can you tell us about what Adderall is and why it works?
Sure. So Adderall is one of the many stimulant medications that are used as generally first-line treatment for ADHD. And it does help sort of regulate some of the neurotransmitters that Dr. White was talking about in people's brains who are suffering or who are currently living with ADHD to kind of help with that focus and that attention.
So it's a controlled substance. We know this. What makes any type of medicine a controlled substance?
That's a good question. And so a controlled substance is something that's designated by the Drug Enforcement Agency, so a federal agency. And it indicates that there is some level of abuse potential. And so while, you know, generally we would say that with most medications that are designated controlled substances, that the risk of abuse is generally outweighed by the therapeutic benefit of the substance, of course, taking into account, you know, patient-specific factors, which I'm sure Dr. White can comment on. But there's an indication that there is that risk there. And so for the case of stimulants, this is what would be considered a Schedule II controlled substance, which is the highest level of controlled substance that is still considered like therapeutically useful for medicinal purposes.
So when we talk stimulants, again, let's go back a little bit. When we're talking a stimulants, what is that doing and how does that make people focus even more?
Yeah. So it helps regulate some of the neurotransmitters like I talk about. So in particular, norepinephrine. So something that can kind of help the brain focus on the most important information as opposed to all the information at once, like Dr. White had mentioned.
Now, Dr. White, I wanted to talk to you about what it's like for you as a physician to write prescriptions. Let's start just generally first on like what the communication is between you and the pharmacist and the patient, and then talk specifically about medicines like an Adderall.
Well, you have to be very careful as a physician to understand what the patient's needs are, the specific patient in front of you. It's really important to understand, did they have an addiction history? If they have an addiction history, does it make sense to prescribe a stimulant? Or is this a case where a non-stimulant option would be a better choice? In this discussion, I think it's really important that we look at different tracks for helping people with ADD, because medications aren't the only option. So when I'm sitting down with a patient, we have to explore, do you believe that there may be some alternative supports for you? Is there something else going on? You have to make sure that the person who presents is not coming in with difficulty with focus because maybe they're traumatized or there's an underlying disorder or problem that we need to rule out before we land on the diagnosis of ADD or ADHD.
And so then once you land on the diagnosis and once you have established that that is what the patient has, what goes into the prescription process and what is that communication like with you and the pharmacist, and especially when it comes to a controlled substance like Adderall?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I do not generally write, because I see adults, I generally don't write for immediate release Adderall. I tend to prefer a longer acting medication. Adderall comes in an extended release that lasts for approximately 10 to 12 hours, whereas the immediate release form only acts for 4 to 6 hours. So if you have somebody who's working, you generally don't want them to be having to think about their medication during the day. If they can just take it and do their work day, that's great. But there is a Vermont Prescription Monitoring Service that I check before I write a prescription to make sure that the patient doesn't have numerous prescriptions from numerous doctors across the state. And I also make sure that this is medication that there aren't any contraindications for in the patient. As far as the communication with the pharmacist, generally there, I don't reach out to the pharmacist other than to send the prescription unless there is a concern or an issue.
Awesome. And then pharmacist Lauren Bode, you take over after you get the scripts. And what is it, I guess, I want to compare and contrast what it's like to fill up maybe a regular prescription that's not a controlled substance versus something that is a controlled substance.
Sure. And I think one of the key points to this conversation is that when things are going really smoothly, from, you know, outside of the pharmacy perspective, there really is not going to be much difference. The usually electronic prescription comes in, it gets processed, reviewed for clinical efficacy and appropriateness, filled, adjudicated through the insurance system, and, you know, dispensed to the patient. And there are some additional processes that are happening in the pharmacy that are a part of the fact that it is a controlled substance. So some additional inventory requirements and some double checks. But I think what really is central to this conversation today is that when things don't go smoothly, that's where things can get additionally complicated for this particular medication. So, for example, where there are many, most medications, if let's say one pharmacy doesn't have the medication in stock but another does, that prescription could be sent over fairly seamlessly, at least to the public eye, to have that filled at a second pharmacy. But that's not the case with this particular medication. And so that's where there needs to be that collaboration between the patient, the provider, and the pharmacist to have an authorized prescription transferred, or excuse me, sent in to the next pharmacy that perhaps does have that in stock. And that's where things can get challenging. And this is what I imagine we're going to hear from many patients looking for those meds.
And so I just want to simplify maybe what you just said. So what it means that there's just more communication. So one pharmacy can't just say hey, this patient has whatever, fill in the name of whatever prescription, can you fill it up? They have to go back to the doctor. The doctor has to say, oh, yes, this pharmacy can fill it up.
So let's say
I don't want to oversimplify incorrectly.
No. So let's say, for example, you're filling a medication for blood pressure. And we can take the example of a couple years ago, there was an entire class of blood pressure medications that went on back order. In those cases, a few things could happen. Where if a pharmacy didn't have, say, one blood pressure medication in stock, they could send the prescription to another pharmacy and have the patient fill it there. Alternately, they could phone the provider's office and say, hey, we don't have this in stock. Is it all right if we go ahead and substitute 275-milligram tablets instead of one 150-milligram tablet? And that'd be permissible. For a Schedule II controlled substance like a stimulant, though, those sort of efficiencies are not legally permitted. We would need a new prescription directly from the doctor's office, whether that's electronic or printed. It can't be transferred, can't be verbally modified. So it just creates some additional logistical barriers.
And Dr. White, what are you seeing or what have you heard from patients when it comes to the shortage? Are your patients feeling this effects?
My patients have not really been affected too much because I tend to go with the longer acting formulations. However, I have had some calls from people out of state who have, wondered if they could just have me prescribe for them that only that medication because it's available in the state. And there are licensing issues. I'm only licensed in Vermont and Massachusetts. And so that's it's not legal for me to write for people out of the state. And it gets tricky. And I also would not write a prescription for a patient without coordination with their psychiatrist. So that's been kind of a no-go for those patients. But you can switch the medication if there is an issue with getting the immediate release. You can switch to an extended release, or there are many, many other options. There are 30 plus different stimulant medications available. And there are definitely ways to safely switch between medications.
We had somebody tweet us and they just said, just give them Vyvanse and move on, problem solved. Why does that work or not work? Dr. White, I'll start with you.
I'm laughing. You can give them Vyvanse. That's accurate. Vyvanse, the dosing is not going to be exactly the same, but the Vyvanse may or may not be tolerated by the person who was on Adderall. So each one of these medications is, it's always a trial, and the patient knows their bodies the best, but stimulant medications do come with side effects. There can be urinary retention, there can be headaches, there can be insomnia, there can be lack of appetite, and some medications are better tolerated than others. It's generally felt that there's two kinds of stimulant medications. There's methylphenidate-based medications, and there are amphetamine-based medications. Adderall happens to be in the amphetamine-based category. And methylphenidate-based medications are considered to be somewhat better tolerated, whereas the amphetamines are considered to be slightly more effective in adults. So it's an interesting challenge to match up the medication to the person in a way that is without uncomfortable side effects and is as effective as possible with the lowest risks.
Lauren, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, and to continue on that, I mean, for many patients, that is exactly the strategy that we're going to pursue, is looking for a therapeutic alternative in a different medication class that is available. And for many people, that's going to be very effective and well-tolerated and, may actually end up being a preferred therapy going forward. But we do know that there's going to be some patients, at least, for whom that's not going to be the best strategy. And those are the patients who really do kind of end up in a lurch. So to the person commenting on Twitter, you're absolutely not wrong. The thing that can happen, though, we've seen some signs of this as well, is that as people have been looking for those therapeutic substitutions, we're starting to see some stresses in the supply chain of some of these other stimulants, including Vyvanse, funnily enough, that the tweet referenced that one in particular, because, each medication has its own supply chain and there are some finite limits to that supply. But on the face of it, yes, that would be kind of one of the initial strategies we'd pursue.
I want to go to the phones right now and I want to talk to Daniel in Montpelier. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hi, Connor, Dr. White, and Lauren. I am a longtime user of prescription psychotropic meds, including prescribed controlled substances, and I'm also an advocate for those with mental health, developmental disability, and substance use conditions. And I wanted to solicit Lauren and Dr. White's reaction to individuals like me and parents of those taking such meds who have found that the debilitating side effects of these meds, as with so many others like it, far outweigh the benefits. We advocates have found that based on decades of progressive evidence-based research, that this is a very critical issue. And we've been pushing the Vermont's mental health care system to de-emphasize meds in favor of less invasive, more effective, and significantly less costly.
Daniel, thank you for your call. I think we got it. Dr. White, let's start with you, this push to de-emphasize these medications.
Yeah, I think that there are some patients who really describe the side effects not being worth the benefits. And I've had a number of patients say, this isn't working for me. And I really want to return to the idea that, you know, why are we having this spike right now? And part of the spike is because there are other things that people are not doing that they could be doing to help to change the way their minds are working right now. We're spending so many hours on screens and it's not good for us. And there are things that we can do, like mindfulness, like biofeedback, like making sure we're exercising every day, learning relaxation techniques, problem-solving strategies. There are other ways to support folks who may not benefit from medications or may find them too difficult to take. So I appreciate the input from the caller. Thank you.
I also want to hear from you, Lauren. You're a pharmacist. Tell us from your reaction to that.
Well, and as a pharmacist, I'm highly attuned to that. There are limits to medications, and all medications do have inherent risks. And, you know, it is always going to be a highly individualized decision whether to use a medication. And this extends, you know, far beyond, like, mental health, you know, also into somatic health. There's the potential for side effects with any medication. And I am in agreement. There should be a balanced approach to the use of medications that also includes lifestyle interventions. And I think this is as true for ADHD as it is for diabetes and high blood pressure.
Now, we've been talking specifically about ADHD medications so far in the show, but now I want to take a step back and talk more broadly about medication shortages in general. Pharmacist Lauren, what can you tell us about that, about what we're seeing?
Well, so what we're seeing is our norm at this point. You know, of the, you know, the 10 years I've been a part of this profession, managing drug shortages has been a daily fact of my professional life. So right now, managing the immediate release Adderall shortage is just one of the handful of drug shortages that I'm actively helping patients and providers navigate. So some notable other ones include a shortage of amoxicillin for pediatric patients, as well as certain diabetes medications, and even now just over-the-counter Tylenol and ibuprofen for pediatric patients.
And as we head into the flu, you know, as we head into flu season, I just read an article that, you know, we're dealing with flu, RSV, and still COVID-19. Where can people go to get these over-the-counter medications if there are not? Or I guess, are there any alternatives?
So there are potentially some alternatives.
I want to add safe alternatives.
Absolutely. And you'll never hear me advocate for anything as a pharmacist unless I absolutely believe or have reason to believe in its safety. And so what I will say for many things is that with any supply, it's going to be a very fluid situation. And so what I would encourage more than anything is just communication between your pharmacist, your provider, and you as a patient. That's going to be kind of the three points of the triangle that are going to be really important to kind of work in collaboration for managing, honestly, any medication shortage. This is particularly true for prescription medications, but again, even with over-the-counter medication shortages, absolutely, please make all of your, you know, dosing and treatment decisions in consultation with your pharmacist or provider. There are risks to taking too much acetaminophen or too much ibuprofen, and so making sure that you're selecting an appropriate dose for you or your child is extremely important.
I want to go back to the phones, and listeners, if you want to join the conversation, if you have questions or comments, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Alexander in Middlebury. Alexander, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What's your question or comment?
Well, it's pretty similar to the last question, so I don't want to make your guests repeat themselves, but I am curious for, you know, the shortage being seems like it presents an ideal time to for a lot of people to explore alternative treatments, and you know, whether that's a behavioral therapy or some kind of herbal or fungal or other kind of homeopathic, whatever it is. I'd be curious if either of your guests have particular treatment options that, for whatever reason, their, you know, really capture their interests they think are particularly promising.
Thank you for your call, Alexander. Pharmacist Lauren Bodie, we'll start with you.
Sure. So again, I think it's going to come down to the individual. There's as many ways to treat many diseases as there are patients, you know, and we turn to, you know, medications like stimulant medications because we do have a wide body of evidence that shows their safety and efficacy in helping people manage their ADHD symptoms. However, certainly seeking some of these non-medication-based approaches may be beneficial. In terms of seeking some of these like complementary alternative medicine, it's somewhat less clear. The evidence base we have is not as consistent and not as compelling, and there are challenges in terms of utilizing these therapies that occasionally can really like limit their utility.
I want to read an email that we got from a listener. Robin emailed us and says, an increase in weather emergencies because of climate change means we need to rethink the country's just-in-time medication renewal policies. For my family, this has meant that we cannot renew our prescriptions until we are just a few days away from running out. If prescriptions could be refilled 2 weeks before they were due, people would have more of a chance to ride out a shortage. Dr. White, I want to get your take on that. Is this what you think a good time to rethink our policies?
Well, I do have patients who live in remote areas and snowstorms can be really difficult for them to negotiate if they're trying to pick up their medications. And I do have patients who feel very stressed at the thought of going without their controlled medications. And you do have to be much more vigilant about start and stop dates with control medications because you don't want someone to get ahead of where they're supposed to be with the medication. So to me, it does make sense for people to be able to pick up a few days ahead of time, but this is a situation where you would have to weigh it on a case-by-case basis. There are some people who would perhaps do fine with a week or two of medication ahead. And there are others who may not be able to manage that inventory. And I'm talking about this from the perspective of someone who works with individuals with addiction backgrounds.
I'm curious to get your take on if somebody's running out of medicine and there just happens to be a snowstorm, what is the protocol that they should do in order is rationing your medication appropriate in that scenario?
If somebody, I have had patients say, I'm terrified to drive in the snow and can you please make sure I can fill early? And I absolutely will make a note and work with the pharmacist to make sure that patient gets their medication ahead of time.
But let's say they were caught off guard. They have like one pill left. Do they ration that and like take it, skip a day or skip a dose? Or do they, how should one ration or should they not?
I'm not a big fan of rationing doses. It's best for the patient to stay on their normal schedule. An interruption in the supply chain can be really devastating for a patient. I kind of wanted to circle back to the two callers who were advocating for people to, you know, try to manage without their medication. And ADHD can be a really debilitating condition for some individuals. I've had patients who've never been able to work for more than a month at a time. They lose job after job after job. And then when they've gotten on the right medication regimen or combination of medication and therapy, they've all of a sudden, for the first time in their lives, been able to work for a 1 year at a job. I just think that's, you know, it's important to understand that these medications can really make a difference in people's lives.
Pharmacist Lauren Bodie, do you want to add?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's good to know that there are some people with ADHD who routinely do drug holidays, because that is how their ADHD manifests and that's appropriate for them. But there are other people for whom that is not appropriate and it's not something that, like, it supports their functioning and engagement in their communities. And so it really can be quite individual. I feel like that word keeps coming up in our conversation, but it's because there's really a grain of truth in that. I think in terms of mitigating some of these issues, in terms of like early fills or rationing and that sort of thing, again, that's going to be on a case-by-case basis. In terms of the early fills, you know, just I want to note that this is something that's governed by like federal law. So any fix would need to happen on a federal level around how controlled substances are used and dispensed from a pharmacy point. And on the idea of rationing, I want to encourage patients to reach out to their provider, reach out to their pharmacist, like for that consultation in terms of how to individually manage their particular situation. And in particular, because many medications, some of the ones we've talked about today, for example, cannot be safely cut in half. For example. And so making sure that any plan is a safe one for the patient is really important, and making sure they're taking these actions in consultations with their healthcare providers.
I want to read an email that we got from one of our listeners who said, for folks on Medicare who rely on Part D coverage for medications, there is very little coverage for ADHD medications. I understand that the only approved generic medication will no longer be approved as of January of next year. What can you tell us about dealing with this issue? Dr. White, I'll start with you, and just wanted to get your take on this and what you know.
Well, I do know that there are some medication formulations that I would prefer to give to patients that are out of reach financially, or they do require a very complicated prior approval process. And in some instances, the medications that I would like to prescribe are actually safer for the patient than the one that is more affordable and the one that is preferred by insurance. So that certainly can be a problem. Absolutely.
Well, so I'll say that, you know, when we talk about Medicare, in particular from a prescription drug coverage size, I mean, we'll often speak about it as if it's a monolithic entity. But in fact, you know, Medicare Part D, which is the part of Medicare that covers prescription drugs, is actually 10,000 individual plans run through any number of different companies. And so the coverage may vary company to company. But I will absolutely, you know, agree with Dr. White here that sometimes we do see a mismatch between what we as providers know and understand as being the optimal, most, you know, safest and most effective therapy, in particular for older adults, is sometimes not the formulation or the product that is covered by a Medicare Part D plan. So it's not terribly surprising to me, unfortunately, that the caller emailer is running into this scenario, because it's actually something that we run into across a broad swath of conditions for patients covered by Medicare.
We're looking at medications that will easily cost over $400 a month, some of these formulations.
And so, yeah, and that gets put on in the out of pocket. That's out of pocket for what you're talking about, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
I want to go to the phones. Let's go to Judith in Brattleboro. Judith, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled that you're having this today, because I'm talking with my psychiatrist about the possibility of trying amantadine, which was talked about in Delivered from Distraction by Edward Hallowell and John Rady, two of my favorites. And they said that it had gotten a bad rap because they gave too much, the doses were too big. So I'm wondering, what is the wisdom? They said in regular doses it would be quite effective.
Thank you so much for that call, Judith. We're running out of time, so I just want to make sure that we can get an answer to you. I think she said amantadine was the prescription, was what she was talking about. Pharmacist Lauren Bode, do you have any thoughts?
I don't. I think I would need to know a little more about the patient than what time will allow. But certainly it's a great question to continue the conversation with your healthcare provider.
And as we're running out of time, Dr. White, what do you think moving forward is the most important thing for someone to take away from this conversation?
I want people to understand that they have lots of options, that there are alternatives for them. If they're out of Adderall, that there are other forms that they can take, and that there are also things that they can do that are not controlled. There are non-stimulant medications, and then there are all kinds of other ways to support their focus and attention.
I have a feeling yours is going to say something about individuals.
Absolutely. It all depends on the person. That's right.
Yeah. And I'll say from my perspective, I would encourage people to really stay in good communication with their pharmacist, who can be a great advocate for them and can help be a conduit to good information about shortages and therapeutic alternatives that might be good for them.
We're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank my guest, Lauren Bode, a pharmacist and interim executive director at the Vermont Pharmacists Association. Thank you so much for joining us.
Been my pleasure.
And Dr. Suzanne, a psychiatrist in private practice, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.